E pluribus unum, out of many is one. That was the founding principle for America. Indeed, American language and culture shows the imprint of many different groups and influences. But as the United States becomes more diverse, sometimes unity and understanding between different groups can become strained. Yet in this global economy, becoming culturally competent is critical to business success. And as individuals, we learn so much about ourselves and others when we venture outside of our cultural comfort zone. I'm Susan Wilson, and today on Central Standard, we'll hear about one man's journey to adjust to cultural differences and how he's using what he learned to help others to work and live in an increasingly multicultural society. That's after this hour's NPR News. A country of immigrants, the United States has long been viewed as a melting pot. This meant that people assimilated, shedding their native culture and language to blend in to become, quote, bona fide Americans. However, as America becomes more increasingly diverse, people of many colors and cultures aren't interested in melting in a way that erases their heritage. They instead want to celebrate aspects of their unique culture while still considering themselves American. What's more, a global economy dictates that success in business means a solid understanding of cultural differences in communication, values, and customs. For Kansas City, decades of housing practices have often created and maintained a racial divide. So depending on where and how we grow up, some of us still struggle to appreciate cultures different than our own. And in spite of progress, many of us still live around, go to church with, and hire people who tend to be just like us. Is this really a problem? How can we stay true to ourselves while living in a multicultural society? And what role can diversity training play in making us better neighbors, employees, and leaders? This is Central Standard, and I'm Susan Wilson. Today's Central Standard will focus on some of the challenges and opportunities we face in our increasingly multicultural world and how we prepare ourselves. So with us today, we have Emmanuel Gumpsy, president of All World Cultures and Languages, Inc., a training and consulting firm that focuses on diversity and diversity education, intercultural communication, and language. Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson.
So I know that this whole topic of intercultural communication and education is certainly one of academic interest to you, but also something you've had firsthand experience with. Share a little bit about how you came to Kansas City and how you got into this whole area.
Thank you for having me. I grew up in a very small village in Cameroon, my cultural life changed the day that I was hired by the U.S. Peace Corps. And I was the language trainer and culture trainer for the United States Peace Corps for about 9.5 years at different places in Africa. By the time I left the Peace Corps, I was the chief language coordinator with the organization in Cameroon. So that's then that I moved to the U.S. as a French teacher. That was about 20 years ago.
And you talk about how when you came from Cameroon, it was a culture shock.
It was a huge culture shock, even though I looked at myself as somebody who knew the American culture. But when I moved here, I actually faced it. And it was not easy. I learned the hard way. And I'm still learning, actually.
Now, when you first came, looking back to first coming here, what did you first notice that was a cultural clash for you?
The biggest cultural clash for me was my expectations of what America was.
How so?
Well, I thought that I knew Americans. Because having worked for the Peace Corps for so many years and observed and lived and worked with Americans overseas, I thought that, first of all, coming here, They were going to be just like those U.S. citizens that I knew overseas, but it was a little difference.
So you talk about you've had some, quote, hilarious and disastrous cultural experiences, especially as a French teacher. So what were those?
Yes. The first thing that I want to mention is the fact that when I moved here teaching with the Kansas City School District and coming from the Peace Corps where we were training Peace Corps volunteers to fit in the culture of Africa, nobody thought of training us here to fit in the culture of urban education in the United States. So, well, examples abound in the book that you're mentioning, Hilarious and Disastrous Cultural Shock, that I wrote. It was the fact that I did not personally fit within the culture of the United States, the culture of the elementary school where I was teaching.
So one of the things you encountered was, and that you were shocked by, is when you contacted parents about student misbehavior.
Yes. The parents were rejecting the blame, the fault, or the responsibility of the children's behavior entirely on me. One example, I called a parent to comment about the child's behavior, and the parents told me, I am a nurse myself. I take care of my patients. I don't call anybody to come and help me. So you are the teacher. You need to take care of my son. You don't need me.
And so that would be very different in Africa, right?
Absolutely different.
How so?
Parents, well, you certainly know this saying emphasizing the fact that it takes the whole village to raise a child. So we believe that if a child misbehaves in school, first of all, that is against one of our biggest value, which is respect for age, respect for adults. Second, it takes the whole village to raise a child again. Every correction that I will impose to the child will be supported by the parent. Mm-hmm. So
you also tell a story about using a bad finger when you worked at a school. Tell us about that.
Yes, I was teaching French. I had my third graders, and my assumption was that to my third grade, they would know how to say, may I go to the bathroom in French, and which is basically five words. It was difficult for these kids to put those five words together, which is, puis-je aller aux toilettes? So I used my fingers, assigning a word on each of them. And unfortunately, when we were reviewing, the middle finger was assigned to the word aller. And when I pointed the middle finger, the kids did not remember, none of them remembered the word aller at all. They shouted, oh, ooh. I didn't know what was going on.
You did something bad.
Something bad. But the worst was that the school principal came in later and called me into her office to tell me that I showed the kids the bad finger. And I didn't know which of my fingers were the bad one. So that was a big culture shock to me.
Now, you also had a colleague who was pregnant at the school, and there was a little incident that happened there that really illustrates, you know, how working across cultures can be difficult. Tell me about that.
Well, you really read my book. This young lady, good friend of mine, really, you know, she helped me a lot. A good colleague next door. She was teaching another third grade class. But one morning, she ran into my classroom and she shouted, "Hey, Emmanuel, guess what? I'm expecting." Well, I didn't understand what expecting meant, and I asked her, "Expecting what?" She said, "A baby, my first child." I just wanted to double check. I said, "Are you telling me that you're pregnant?" She said, yes, and she was still excited. I was not. I stepped back, angry, and I asked her, why are you telling me about your pregnancy for? I didn't do it. And she was upset. I was upset. she didn't understand that, you know, as a man coming from the rainforest of Central Africa, you don't, if you tell me that you are pregnant, that means I had something to do with it. And I had been here only 4 months. And
you said you had no part in that.
I had no part in that. Thank you.
So how did you get it straightened out?
I think the union attorney came and
asked. So this became a big deal.
This became a big deal. This was really a big deal. And what happened, sorted out, she asked questions to me and also to my colleague. At the end, they found out that there was a total miscommunication. So there was no complaint filed or anything of that nature.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. We're talking about understanding cultural differences with Emmanuel Gumpsy, president of All World Languages and Cultures, Inc., a training and consulting firm that focuses on diversity education. So we're talking about working and communicating across cultures. Tell us about what you've learned and what you've faced about people who are different from yourself and what challenges you've had. Join the conversation by calling us 816-235-2888. That's 235-2828. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. So, you know, kind of moving the conversation forward, when we talk about diversity, some people believe that the focus is only on minorities. Is this a common misconception?
It's a common misconception. And a misconception that we are trying to alleviate.
What is the misconception there? Talk about that.
In general, when people talk about diversity, they are talking about race. Diversity goes way beyond race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, national origin, you know, and so on. In my training, I usually tell people, if you look at the person sitting next to you, and there's one difference between that person and you, and there's always a difference, you know that is diversity right there. I have twin daughters, and they are so different from each other. They grew up in the same house, you know, same parents, and ate the same food, same education. But they are very different from each other, and that is absolutely fine with us parents.
So one of the things I think that creates differences is learning, you know, what we learn growing up, some of the values we grow up around. Can those really be changed once you learn certain values and attitudes?
In our training, we do not ask people to change. We ask people to adapt. You cannot change your values, especially if they're ingrained within your culture and yourself. But you can adapt and be flexible in understanding that while you cannot change your values, other people may not be able to change their values as well. But now there's a gray area of behavior, of attitude that you can change to adapt into different situations. And that is what the main thing that we emphasize.
But when you do training, I'm sure that some people are more amenable to adapting than others. What kind of resistances do you face from people that you're trying to train?
I personally believe that resistance comes from lack of understanding of cultural differences. When I start training or when I coach, I don't go from the standpoint that people are bad or they are acting good or bad. I go from the standpoint that if people knew what differences, cultural differences is between them and the other party, whose culture may be different, these people may behave the right way. So I think education is the key.
Now, along those lines, I've heard people say, look, we don't need training. You know, we're all people. We're all human. If we just observe the golden rule, which is treat other people as we want to be treated, that's all we need to really know about others. Is this naive?
It is very naive. And I want to correct that golden rule the golden rule in terms of cultural understanding does not mean that you treat everybody like I would like to be treated. The golden rule in terms of culture is treat people like they would like to be treated, not like you would like to be treated. I usually take this example. I don't eat mashed potato, okay? But if you love mashed potato and you want to treat me like you would treat yourself, then you are not going to do me any favor. I will starve at your invitation then, because I will not eat what you thought I was going to eat. So when you learn about who I am, my culture, my likes and dislikes, then you'll be able to adapt again.
Now, you know, I've heard very well-meaning people say, I don't see color. And so why are we making a big deal out of this? And these are very kind, well-meaning people who say this. Is that also naive?
That's very naive. And in the spectrum of what we call a developmental process of cultural sensitivity, the people who say, oh, I don't see color, or we are all the same, children of God, or all bloods are red, things of that nature. These are people who are at the level of denial. And these people are more resistant to change. They are difficult to educate because they do not believe that there is a difference between, there are differences among people. If you don't believe that there are differences, it will be difficult for you to make changes and adapt to differences.
Now, in this whole discussion about cultural differences, where does stereotyping fit in?
The stereotype comes from education, the media, and the perception, the historical perception in general. People transfer one example of a situation that they have lived into another, creating such a translation that should not exist. That's where stereotypes comes in. And now, am I saying that we cannot prejudge? Absolutely. When you see a tall person, something comes to your mind. You know, and actually multiple things may come to your mind depending on the culture you grew up in. When you every time I do training and I ask people here, what comes to your mind when you see a real tall person? Then everybody would say, oh, probably a basketball player. But if you're asking that question to people who grew up in the rainforest where I grew up, the answer will be, hey, that's somebody who can steal mangoes from a fruit, from a tree.
Because they can reach the tree.
Because they can reach the tree. Basketball has nothing to do with mango trees.
Now, you know, there's lately a lot of discussion. I mean, to your point about denial, there's a lot of discussion about unconscious bias. Because as we all live and learn, we unconsciously develop these stereotypes about other people and these biases about other people. What do people need to know about biases and perceptions that are automatic and unconscious?
I will come again to education. Most of the time, unconscious bias is that they don't know that they are being biased. And examples abound. When people act just the way they are, but the way they act does not ring the same bell in somebody else's culture. In other words, we do not see the world the way the world is, but the way we are. So in terms of biases, people most of the time will step back and think, in my culture, in my way of viewing such and such thing, it is good. That is the way I should behave. But when you're looking at the same issue from another perspective, it may become biased. It may hurt somebody else. But originally, from the person who is starting the process, it is not necessarily hurtful.
But I guess the point is, if I don't know that I'm biased, if my biases are unconscious, how do you help people realize those biases in a non-threatening, non-hurtful way?
When we do training, we provide, there's a lot of case studies. We use simulations and to let people know that this is really what happened. Now, a lot of lawsuits are out there, you know, lots of complaints to the EO, showing people that these are the things that really, when you do, you will be unconsciously or sometimes consciously biased. A lot of people have good intentions, but the end result of what they do ends up being totally viewed differently by other people.
I know there's this one example of if you send a resume out.
Yes.
And there's a study that if you send a resume out and one has a traditionally European or Caucasian name and the other has a name that's clearly ethnic, that the resume that's clearly ethnic gets fewer callbacks. And that's an example that's commonly used mm-hmm. as one of unconscious bias, that I don't think anybody looking at the resumes is saying to themselves, I'm not going to call this person back because they're black or Hispanic, but somehow they don't get called back. What are your thoughts about that?
That is a big issue. The thought about that, the idea about, behind that is people want to feel comfortable around people who look and think like them. In the workplace, most of the time, people will hire people with whom they are comfortable. You know, changing, hiring somebody who doesn't look, sound, believe, think like you is difficult. There's a lot of changes that needs to be, a lot of adaptation that needs to be done. So if you want it easy, why don't you just hire somebody who thinks like you? And you know, they say also that wherever everybody thinks the same, actually nobody thinks. I have a quote from the CEO of Visa. He says, never hire to promote in your own image. It is foolish to replicate your strength and ideally to replicate your weaknesses. It is essential to employ, trust, and reward those whose perspective, ability, and judgment are radically different from yours. So when you hire people who are the same as you are, well, the organization is going to continue to go through the same route it has gone so far.
We're talking about intercultural understanding and communication in the workplace and in society with Emmanuel Gumpsy, president of All World Languages and Cultures. If you want to join our discussion, call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. So when you talk about this whole issue of hiring people that are just like yourself, there's also literature that talks about how this creates groupthink. In some ways, you don't make as good as decisions when you don't have diverse input.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's where a new notion is coming in now to add to diversity, which is inclusion or inclusiveness. People, after they hire people who look like themselves, they're thinking, well, it is going to be easy in the workplace. But in organizations today, you look around the country with the demographic change, today it is crucial that people hire people who do not think like them. When we are talking about diversity, I want to make sure that we are not only talking about racial or ethnic diversity. We are talking about cognitive diversity. We are talking about diversity of perspectives, diversity of experiences, and so on. So inclusion is being added to diversity to make both inclusion, diversity and inclusion, a package that people in organizations today need to take into consideration. And what's the big difference on that? Let me know if I can share that very briefly.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes. Diversity, when you look at the example, the analogy that I usually take is look at you as someone who is going to plant a garden of flowers that people will come and enjoy. You have the option to pick one type of flower, and they will grow, become the same type of flowers. But if you want diversity, then you pick different flowers, different seeds, and plant them. Now, it is important, that's diversity. It is important that the soil you are going to use has the capacity to grow different types of flowers so that the garden finally will look good. So if you have the soil that does not accept different type of seeds, then some of the seeds will die. Now, the seeds are diversity, the ground, the soil is inclusion.
So we're going to take a call from Russ. Welcome to Central Standard, Russ. You have a comment and a question?
Hi, yeah, great program. I've told my people, and I have several businesses here in Kansas City, Missouri, and I actually am the only Caucasian in any of it, and our group of people, I want to say, who work with us, not for us, is highly diverse. And they all bring an enormously different point of view and backgrounds and ideas. And so we're always growing in terms of our skills and what we have to offer. And the other thing that's nice is that because of that, we also have connections into each of these different communities so that it's really expanded our customer base. I did graduate school here at KU, and at the time, it was highly diverse, highly universal setting with people from all over the world, a lot of women, a lot of different cultures and countries, and I got used to that. And actually, I feel uncomfortable in groups of just, frankly, other people just like myself because it feels stale and it feels like they're in a rut and they have very fixed opinions and they have very fixed ways of doing business. And so I guess I wish to add that to it and ask your speaker if he's found the same thing, that not only is it good for the business in terms of ideas and working together and diversity, but also in terms of your customer base. It allows me to enter markets that I otherwise wouldn't be able to access if I was simply one group of people.
Great question about the business case for diversity. What say you, Dr. Gumpsy?
Thank you, Russ, for that's a very important question. Today, if you look at the demographics, the changing demographics within the United States, and which is something that is not going back in every single community, it is important to design marketing, to design product, to design services that will fit, adapt, and be sold to every single constituency within the U.S. You ask any organization today, if they are not getting diverse, if they are not getting thinking about diversity and inclusion, then they will be left behind. Ask some politicians. They will tell you how hard they are fighting to get that diversity within their organizations.
Kansas City, we're talking about how we bridge divides of race, culture, and ethnicity, and how that might be good for business. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll continue our discussion about diversity and communicating across cultural lines in a society that's more diverse. And if you want to join the conversation, call us now, 816-235-2888. That's 235-2828. Central Standard returns in just a minute. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Susan Wilson, and my guest today is Emmanuel Gumpsy, president of All World Languages and Cultures, Inc., a training and consulting firm. Welcome back. And again, if you want to join our conversation, dial us at 816-235-2888. So, you know, we've talked about the advantages of diversity and diverse groups in business. But I've had a lot of experiences. I've been the only woman, for example, when I did my postdoctoral training. I've been kind of the only minority in groups. So what advice, though, do you have? Because often being the only and having that only diverse opinion can be difficult for that diverse person. So what do you say about that?
I have been there myself a lot of time. I have been a lot of time the only minority in a group, sometimes even when I do training, or in a soccer field when I'm the referee and the entire crowd and the players are in the majority. So how do you prepare yourself to deal with that? Simply understanding that you, first of all, needs to behave in such a way that your attitude is in line with the policy of the organization. That is crucial. Second, do not open your eyes to look for something which is going to lead to the idea or to the perception that I am being the target. I know it is not very easy, but if you look for ideas, for clues to that will show you that you are being a target in a setting like that, you will find a lot. Sometimes it will be totally fall off base, but
sometimes it might be true, right?
Sometimes it might be true. Sometimes I don't want to be naive. No, sometimes it might be true, but you need to be able to assess that perception very closely.
Well, you know, one thing that maybe organizations and businesses don't think about is how they create a welcoming and inclusive environment if they bring in minority workers, especially if there's very few of them. What advice do you have for those organizations to create that welcoming working environment?
I will suggest that those organizations, first of all, understand the type of minorities coming in to work with them or to interact with them. Understanding their values, as we mentioned, is critically important. But at the same time, we would like the incoming minorities to understand the culture of this organization. It needs to go both ways.
I know one of the things that I've told colleagues and organizations is just simple things like including people in conversations. Sometimes when you're the only minority in the room, everyone's chatting about their weekend or something, and you're kind of left out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And including people in the informal social networks, because sometimes at work these informal networks occur, and that's where some decision-making takes place. But if you're not included, so I always tell organizations, that's important to include everyone.
Yes, and also that's where relationships, in every organization, relationships need to be built across the board and across cultures.
You know, in the 90s, diversity training was the hot thing. Everybody was doing it. But a lot of people looked at it critically and said, you know, it really wasn't effective, that there were some instances where people felt like they were embarrassed or hurt by the diversity training. Were these fair criticisms?
That fair criticism in the 90s. Today, if people are still thinking like that, then they're a little bit behind. Today, diversity needs to be viewed in the broadest spectrum possible. And diversity needs to be viewed not as a negative thing. It is okay for people to be different. And it is okay for people to understand that if I understand somebody else's culture, then I will easily interact with that person. But at the same time, I need to teach my culture to other people. Every time people ask me, where's your accent from? Where are you coming from? It's the great opportunity for me to teach them about who I am, things that I like, things that I don't like, and so that they can understand where I'm coming from and we can interact together.
So Jan on the phone asks a question. Well, actually, she hung up, but she says, how do businesses find more diverse people if they aren't applying directly? Is there a database or any other services that can help with this?
When I hear that question, and I am asked that question a lot of time, I always suggest to people to take the analogy of coaches. Coaches move around the country and look for the best players. Every college coach does that, all of them. So if you are sitting to just wait for for people from different cultures to apply at your organization, sometimes they may not. And it is important also for them to clearly mention, and a lot of organizations are doing that now, to clearly mention that minorities are welcome in this organization. But sometimes you don't even need to say it. Once you have minorities, keep them. Retention is part of what inclusion is all about. If you don't keep them, they will go out and they will say, you know, that organization X is not the right place for us. The word will spread and people are not going to apply, even if you want them. So creating an environment which is very inclusive, which is welcoming, is crucial. But at the same time, go out and seek for quality employees.
I think your point is well taken, because I know a colleague of mine was surprised when I told her that many minorities, they do some homework. They want to know, is this a good organization to work for if you are a minority? Because, you know, quite frankly, minorities have had some bad experiences,
yes,
in some organizations. And so
I agree.
Anything that you can do to get the word out there that you're not only seeking minorities, but you're a good, welcoming workplace, I think does a lot. So we have a question from Howard. Good morning, Howard, and welcome to Central Standard.
Good
and
morning,
you're from
everyone.
Overland Park.
Yes. Should learning a foreign language be compulsory in American public school education? And if it's not, what's America losing out on? And secondly, when you were in Cameroon, did you ever meet Roger Mila? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's a good question, because there's so many Americans who say English only, and we should focus on English. But, you know, is this a disadvantage for Americans in an increasingly diverse world? Because I know when I meet people from other countries, they know multiple languages.
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. The answer to your last question, yes, I met Roger Miller. We are about the same age, and we play soccer. I didn't play professional like Roger Miller, but yes, I've met him many, many times. Learning a foreign language today is more a necessity than a luxury. Today, my company is All World Languages and Cultures. We provide language services. You do not know how many organizations are going outside of this country, and they fail to win the business, to make the huge profit that they would have made had they been able to understand the culture and also the language of their clients. And one of our motto says, you can buy in any language. Actually, you don't even need to speak to buy. But if you want to sell, you need to speak the language of your customer. Language learning is crucial. There, when I 20 years ago, it was not as prominent as it is today, you know, in public schools. But today, almost every school, starting even elementary, they're offering foreign language classes.
So, Kansas City, what do you think? Is diversity training the best way to sensitize people to cultural differences? And what about learning languages? Or is there another path to becoming culturally sensitive? Tell us your thoughts by calling us now, 816-235-2888. That's 235-2828. Or post your comments to Facebook or Twitter. We're at KCURCST. So, we're going to take another call right now. From Russ from Bonner Springs, and you have a question about religion.
I do, but first of all, it's 2888. You said 2828.
Oh, I'm sorry. 235-2828.
No, 2888.
I mean 2888. I'm messing up today. It's 235-2888.
All right, to the subject. Question. How does one gracefully handle religious incompatibility? I mean, usually it doesn't make any difference, but some company that practices environmental law or works in renewable energy might not want to hire somebody whose church preaches end of days environmental law is the enemy of God. And there are such churches. They even put up billboards. How does one gracefully handle that? And I will take my answer via FM. Thank you.
So good question.
Yeah, it's a very, 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 very good question. Then your question is leading to religious flexibility and religious understanding. Every country has their laws. And I would suggest that if you're in a place where that law is applicable, you may not be able to change that law, and religion or religious practices are some of the most difficult things to adapt to or to change. I will say, go back to what I said earlier, adaptation will be a key to that. Ross, I hope that that helps.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Susan Wilson, and my guest is Emmanuel Gumpsy, president of All World Languages and Cultures. And if you want to jump into the conversation, it's not too late. Call us, and I'll get the number right this time, 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You know, as we've been talking about, there is this strong business case when you're talking about buying and selling in another country. What are some common mistakes people make when they think about conducting commerce in other countries?
First of all, people think that the other country will behave and perceive them just like here. The common mistake is the fact that the U.S. citizens are within the spectrum of culture that we will call, let me just take an example. Most of the time, U.S. Americans think that if I'm going to do business somewhere, I'm going for what they call the bottom line. Okay. Most of the time, other people do not see it strictly like that. People want to develop relationships. They want to build relationships. They want to know you. They want to trust you before they do business with you. That can take, depending on cases, that can take a whole hour of introduction.
So you're saying the American business person wants to get in there, close the deal, and get out.
Exactly.
Without cultivating that relationship.
Yes. And other people do see that actually as rude. You need to be able to build people. People will ask you what on this side of the ocean will be like private questions. Are you married? How were your grades in school? And so on. Have you have children? Before they can start business with you.
So we're talking about preparing ourselves to live and work in a multicultural society and its impact on doing business in a global economy. Join our conversation. Call us at 816-235-2888 or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We've talked a lot about how training can help people, how training can really help people become more culturally aware. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about some of the specifics about how your company does that and what your experiences have been through the training that you've done? What are some of the successes that you've seen people have, and what are the things that are difficult for people?
The format of training that we provide could be group training, small group or large groups, but we also do a lot of one-on-one tutoring. An organization trying to hire one minority, they will call us and we will work sometimes with one person at a time. In general, mostly for those people traveling overseas, they come back and they call us and they said, wow, I don't know how I would have survived without your advice. I don't know how I would have survived in Saudi Arabia. Like just last week, somebody called me about that and said, we were blessed. We were happy that we had the opportunity to talk to you. The other thing is locally, organizations that understand that they do not know it all, because some people think they know it all, they're happy when they call us later and say, well, we want to hire you again and again because our employees are very satisfied with what you taught us. Most of the time, we usually finish diversity with a team building facilitation. The point is that we believe that we are very different from each other. But the key in an organization is that we need to be able to work together toward a common goal and be effective together.
Now, when people have difficulty learning about diversity, because I'm sure in every organization there are those people, and maybe they tend to be people who like rules and guidelines. I've noticed that, You know, they want a formula or a cookbook for how to do everything, and that doesn't work in human interaction. So how do you help them?
We approach diversity not from the standpoint of somebody being guilty of something. And some, most of the time, that's, I have been to a lot of diversity training, and that's what people, we don't go into diversity training to blame somebody. We go to educate, to let people know, based on a lot of examples, the simulation that we use, we let people know that it is okay to make mistakes. It is okay to be culturally different. It is fine if you do not understand other cultures. Culture is like languages. And so what we are wanting you to do here is to become multicultural. People don't lose. I usually say you don't lose your culture by learning another culture, just like languages. You may learn five languages. You don't lose your original, your mother language because you're learning other language. You only become multilingual or multicultural, making you a better person and making your organization a better organization, more productive organization.
What are the common areas that people struggle most with as they go on their learning journey?
Resistance. People do not, you mentioned that religion, people do not believe that they need training.
Well, you know, and the other thing I notice, and I wonder what your advice is about how you deal with this, the whole diversity discussion, some people are like, oh no, not diversity again. And then other people feel uncomfortable talking about some of these matters. So how do you bridge that?
People need to know, we tell them that it is okay to talk about issues of race, even at the workplace.
Do you teach them how to do that?
Yes. It starts with simple conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, people will ask me, how do you pronounce your name? That is very important question to me, because I will tell them that even though there's an N in front of my name, that N is not pronounced.
It's silent.
It's silent, but my name has a meaning. Gum, C, means, in my mother's language, the word of God. And Emmanuel means what it means. So starting a conversation smoothly with something as easy as the name, something as easy as the family structure, and move from there to build relationships, and move from there to talking about more serious things about cultures and diversity and inclusion.
So we're going to take a call from Elizabeth from Paola. Elizabeth?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to bring up that there can be cultural differences between the coasts and the Midwest. When you move to the coast, you find out that everyone assumes that you don't believe in evolution, and the person worked for actually didn't. I asked for time to come back and attend my uncle's memorial for winning the Silver Star, and I'm sorry, the Distinguished Flying Cross, and they were just like, oh, there's no heroes back in the Midwest, and this is somebody that had lived in California all her life, and so there's different kinds of cultural assumptions, even within the United States.
Very much so. Can you talk about some of those regional differences at some time? I mean, we are one country, but very different in different regions.
Examples just abound. There's a lot of differences. When I go to do training with the sports team in colleges, let me tell you, a child, it was just like taking Missouri, a child who graduated from Clinton High School, the one who graduates from Lee Summit High School, and the one who graduated from the Kansas City School District, these are three totally different types of students. When they meet at MU or KU or any other college, UMKC, there's a big different conflicts, cultural differences among a rural child, a suburban child, and an urban student. So that's just one example. But yes, there's a lot of differences around here. Talking about Texas, howdy partner, That's something that I learned here. That's what people like to hear in Texas compared to the Midwest here.
So what advice do you give people who, whether they at work, at, in their neighborhoods, that you, what advice do you give people in general about how do they grow and expand their wealth of knowledge in terms of cultural differences?
First of all, I want people to be selective in what they read and what they see on TV. Do not take everything that somebody will tell you about cultures for its face value. It's important to be selective. The second thing is to learn as much as you can. There's an organization right here in Kansas City, the Ethnic Enrichment Commission, which is really available to go to any organization and make presentations. And so there's a lot of opportunities right here in Kansas City to learn about cultures.
Well, I'd like to thank our guest, Emmanuel Gumpsy, president of All World Languages and Cultures, a training and consulting firm that focuses on diversity education and intercultural communication. And we could have talked forever. You can subscribe to our podcast and hear this conversation again or access any of our previous shows from Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Tune in tomorrow as the Cash Money Crew joins us again to talk about the financial literacy with children. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with help from Claire McInerney. Up to Date is next with a discussion with Kansas City's police chief. For Central Standard, I'm Susan Wilson. And keep listening.